is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to AFL.com.au. Nat Edwards and Cal Tombstone Toomey with you on the road to the draft. How are you, Cal?
Good, thanks, Nat.
I'm liking the cap today.
Today? I always wear out.
Yeah, no, but I particularly like this one.
It's from, actually, it's good we have this guest in because this one's actually from San Diego Zoo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What?
I bought it a few months ago.
How would you describe this colour?
You know I'm colorblind, so I actually bought it thinking it was blue, but everyone tells me it's green.
Well, it's a mint green.
Mint green?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really care. I like the color. I don't know what color it is, but I like the color.
We'll get the opinion of our guest, and I'll introduce him now. It is Collingwood's recruiting manager, Derek Hine. Derek, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be here.
It's been a little while since we've had you in, but
yes,
it's nice to have you back. What do you think of the mint green cap?
Oh, it's more aqua, I would have thought.
Oh, yeah, see?
So Derek was in San Diego a few days before I was in January, so we swapped some notes over some places to eat. And
I didn't go to the places that Cal went
to. The zoo?
yeah, right.
Hey, it's good to have you back because the Pies are playing great footy, and we're going to talk all about this year's draft with you, also some reflections on recent picks and I guess where the list is at the moment and then some wider recruiting issues. But the Pies are in really good form after the weekend, 4-3 and sort of hit back after an average start to the year.
Yeah, look, it's been really pleasing. And I suppose through the JLT series, there was, you know, bits and pieces that would gave us a little bit of an indication where we could potentially go. And, yeah, look, at his baby steps. There's no doubt about that. But there's been some really promising signs. There's obviously the new boys that have come in, but also the development in and the continued improvement in players like James Aish and Sharon Burke and these types of guys, because it just hasn't been those newer boys. It's just been, I suppose, general improvement across the whole group.
I guess after round two, people were automatically saying things like, oh, Bucks needs to go, which is after round two is quite incredible. But did the club sort of have to refocus after a rocky sort of couple of weeks to the season? Because it just seems like things have flipped around a little bit from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, not really. I think that, obviously the boys were reasonably disappointed with the outcome. And yeah, it was probably just more realigning more than anything. And, you know, I think the GWS game really showed some really good signs and, you know, there's been some blue skies since then.
We'll get to the Pies pretty soon, but this year's draft's been talked about a lot, Derek, as one of the best in recent years.
Super draft?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think of it? Do you think the super draft tag is warranted or not? And what do you like about this year's crop?
I mean, I think it's a little bit early to get too carried away with it. You know, everyone has their own opinion. I suppose what's probably a little bit different in this particular draft is there's going to be a little bit more of a bias towards the taller players, particularly in the top 10. And you know, I think it's relatively even as well. So there's going to probably be a little bit there for everyone, whoever's in and around that area. So that's probably the major difference. Post the national championships, I think, you know, we'll have a real good sight on how it all looks. But it's probably a little bit early because the boys, you know, not just in Victoria but also in Western Australia, these guys are sort of filtered back to APS. You know, school footy. So, you know, they now have to come back into the system in 2 to 3 weeks and it's usually that last week of the championships where there's a little bit of continuity, I suppose.
I guess a couple of those tools, and we'd like to have a chat to you about them, are Jack Lukosius, the King brothers, Ben and Max. We'll start with Jack. I mean, what do you like about him as a player that makes him one of these guys that has become a number one contender?
Well, I suppose you could throw Blakey in that.
Of course, Nick Blakey as well.
In that group as well, I suppose. Particularly with Jack and Nick, I think they're both, you know, genuinely can go into other areas of ground. I think they've proven that. You know, even in the South Australian trial, I think Jack played back, then went onto a wing and really dominated, you know, all two positions. Because we know he can play forward, obviously, but you know, and Nick's very similar. But he may even become a midfielder, you know, given what he's been able to show. So I think there's, in particularly in those two boys, there's some really unique areas. I mean, Max has played and had a really consistent period where he's dominated as a forward and, yep, and you know, obviously been back, but now he's sort of flipped forward and having a major impact as well. So, yeah.
Just on Nick, obviously there's no real surprise that he's nominated Sydney as his preferred club of choice. Were you surprised, though, that he nominated that so early on. I think Cal was maybe a little bit surprised by that. Did that?
Well, you guys know Kinnear just as well as what I do, so yeah. It's no surprise really at all. But no, I mean, oh, it's not really surprising. I mean, he's born and bred Sydney boy, and, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a gift, isn't it, really? Yep. I couldn't see Sydney passing him by, put it that way.
No.
So you reckon he's in the number one?
He's definitely in that conversation. There's no two ways about that. I watched him play a couple of weeks ago at Blacktown, and, you know, he was just outstanding. And he's had a little bit of an interrupted prep with, you know, with injuries and so on. And, you know, we're over in the States, and you observe what he could do in that particular group was just, yeah, he was a pretty special player.
Yeah, real leader. Another special player is Max King, and you mentioned him now with the ACL. He's out for the year. I mean, can you see him slipping a couple of spots further back than what might have been the case?
I suppose it's all in the eye of the beholder. You know, I mean, I think that, I mean, he's had a really, really strong period of high-level form. He's a super young man, and there's no doubt that he's going to come back probably, you know, just as well as, you know, any player that, given that his level of professionalism and leadership and so on. But, I couldn't see that, to be honest with you. But again, you know, there is one or two other tools in and around there, and who knows?
Well, we've talked about the tools. What about the midfielders and the smaller types? Who are the guys that have taken your eye from that perspective? I mean, Sam Walsh is one, but some other guys, I imagine, who would be on the radar?
Oh, well, obviously, you know, Sam, and there's your Hills, and, you know, Rankin and Rosie. I mean, and, you know, Jack Hakeley's had a really good body of work over at Central's playing senior footy, and I suppose that, and that's what I really like about, potentially about the West Australian and more so the South Australian system is, you know, you see Hakeley and Lukosius and
Rosie did last week
and Rosie
as well.
Yeah, playing at a senior level, and, you know, so there's no doubt about how they can mix it, with the bigger bodies.
One player we've spoken about a little bit on the podcast so far this year is Isaac Quaynor, and he's obviously a member of your NGA. How's his progress and how's he tracking?
Very slowly. He's very, very slowly.
He's no good. No, he's really struggling. He's got some personality issues. Yeah. Those groins, I don't know if they're recovering.
Stay away.
Yeah. No, look, he's been really good. We've obviously, you know, observed him at close quarters for quite a period of time as, you know, the Northern Academies and other clubs, NGA players. And it's been really pleasing for us to not only see his football development, but his off-field development. You know, the 2 weeks that he spent with us post, he had 1 week with Curtis Taylor with the AAS program, and then he had another week in the NGA stuff. But he's he just fitted in like he'd been there, you know, his whole career.
Yep.
You know, extremely well liked. Yep. He didn't look out of place at training and all that sort of stuff. So where he sits in the scheme of things will sort itself out.
Another one in the NGA is Bailey Wraith, who I know you and a couple of the other Collingwood recruiters were watching as part of a game on Saturday at the Carey Footy Oval. He's a tall defender / ruckman. He played a bit of both on the weekend.
Yeah,
where do you see
forward.
Him?
Yeah.
And also, I guess, tell us his story in terms of his NGA background there.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of contention on that. I think that's pretty well documented. Bailey's mum is South African, and I think immigrated to Australia when she was 3 years old, so yep. It was a little bit of an anomaly there, but the rules are the rules.
You take him?
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly a work in progress. And I think that where the difficulty is for Bailey, not just Bailey, but other players, is where they're transitioning from APS football to TAC football. In Bailey's case, he's had some exposure to the Metro program and all those sorts of things. So it's really... it's a real challenge because there's different needs and different expectations at every single level. So I think the thing with Bailey is he just needs to be able to get a level of continuity, and hopefully that'll be probably more post the national championships, once the APS season's finished and that. So hopefully it's going well, so I would imagine that he'd get a good sample size there.
How tall is he?
He's around the 195, 196.
Okay. Is he quite mobile?
He's very athletic. And as Cal said, they're pushing him through the ruck.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
But it's baby steps with him because it is a work in progress. And, so far so good.
We love a father's son.
We do like father's son.
And the Pies have had quite a few come through the system. In recent times, Will Kelly is another one, son of Craig Kelly, coming through. What can you tell us about Will?
Well, Will's been, he's been in our, not only our Father Son program, but he's been not dissimilar to Bailey to a certain extent, but probably at a little bit higher level. He's been playing predominantly key forward, key back.
Where do you see him playing his best footy?
He's been exposed probably more as a key forward at the moment, and I think that's going to hold him in good stead whichever way he goes. I watched him play a really good game against Nathan Murphy last year down at the Beachside Oval down on South Road. And he did a fantastic job on him. He's got a really high aerobic base, which is really unique for his size. So that's an absolute strength of him. He sees a game well, kicks the ball well. So, again, I think it's about him settling down, whether it be forward or back. And he's still in the Metro squad, so hopefully he'll get some really good exposure through that period as well.
You spoke about Nathan Murphy then, and he was your second pick at last year's draft. Your first was Jaden Stevenson, who we tracked really closely last year.
Love
on
him.
AFL.com. He was a part of the Going Places series, which is not happening this year, Nat, by the way.
What? But I'm so sad.
No Going Places. So Jaden's the final cab off the rank there. But he's been outstanding so far at senior level, played every game and picked six last year. Can you talk us through those final few days before last year's draft as you come to the decision to take Jaden? And obviously there's so much sort of information you needed to require and gather regarding the heart stuff. Are you able to sort of talk us through all that?
Oh, well, I suppose from our perspective in terms of myself and Dom and Maddie and Adam, it was more about getting the approval from the appropriate experts, e.g. the medical guys. And there were some really consistent conversations with our guys and it really didn't. And to credit to Ruben and Greg, who are our doctors, that they were unbelievably professional in the way they went about it. And, I really felt for Jaden and Rick Allen Pete and that, because they went to hell and back. They really did. But, in the end, I take my hat off to our doctors and the process that they went through, and they spelled it all out for us. And we actually really didn't decide until 2 o'clock on the day of the draft that we'd be taking.
So the draft is at 7 o'clock.
And that was probably just more along gathering all the information and, more importantly, getting all the key stakeholders in the room. And Ed was on a conference call, and then we were able to make the decision.
So it was a really collaborative decision. When did you actually find out about his heart condition? When did that come to light for you guys?
I think it was the gravity of it, or the potential gravity. It was like a snowball going down a hill, wasn't it, really? I mean, there was all this stuff that was going on probably 14 days, 21 days prior to the draft.
Yeah. So you were obviously very keen on him at that point, and then that all sort of came to fruition. And you talked about the stress on Jaden, but he just seemed like, even after the draft, he just seemed so, I don't know, relaxed. Like, he took it in his stride, even though it probably was just such a stressful situation.
Yeah. The only time I really, talking to Jaden post the draft, when we went out with the families and that, he was sort of like, I can relax now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Breathe.
And but he hasn't, look, seriously, he hasn't put a foot wrong. I mean, God, I mean,
he's so exciting.
Even the seven games that he's played, and you watch a couple of games and think, I just think he's getting a little bit tired, and then he'll come out and some of the stuff he did on the weekend was pretty special.
He's a pretty quirky character too, isn't he? Like, he's a little bit different. Have you got any favourite stories than when you got to know him last year and went around the house? Or did he give you a tattoo at any point?
No. I keep those to myself. But I'm still trying to get one of those T-shirts off him, but he keeps playing me down the leg side. He may not have the triple X, but anyway.
Yeah. He's been very good, and he was very good again on Sunday night. Nathan Murphy, is it right? I mean, can you confirm that if Stevenson wasn't there at pick six, that you would have taken Murphy at six?
Oh, he's certainly in that discussion.
Yeah.
Who's there? But he was certainly in discussion there. Yeah.
And at what point of last year did he sort of become on your radar for one of those early selections? Because he had a different path.
I don't think it was so much earlier selection. It was just more that, because he came in late, as you guys know. He was from a cricket background. He really didn't have any exposure to,
Footy.
Yeah, school footy and so on. And you know, most pre, you know, every summer he's standing behind the stumps as opposed to, you know, doing, you know, and to Nathan's credit, I mean, he didn't miss a beat through preseason. I would have thought they would have had to back him off at some point in time. But
apart from that time he was caught in the nets, just
correct,
correct, with the bowling machine. Yeah.
But I mean, he probably, I suppose, he probably grew on us and a lot of other clubs in just the way his performances, and then he was able to get into the to Sandy, and that was only been because of circumstance more than anything. So,
so I guess as the draft unfolds, and you've taken Stevenson at six, and then you have to wait till 39. How's that waiting period? Because you know that if he's there at 39, you're definitely going to take him by that point, I imagine. He was that high on your list.
Yeah, he was 4 to 39. Yeah.
So at that point, you just got your fingers crossed that he's going to get through, and with every pick, you're like, oh, you're looking at each other thinking, oh, my God, he might actually get through here.
Yeah, it was sort of like it happens every year. I mean, you know, like it was sort of like a perfect storm to a certain extent, because a club will take a player that you didn't think that may not have, because, and I think that was reflective of the draft.
Mm. It only takes one or two, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, correct.
The whole, domino,
yeah, correct. And you know, and every club's got their Nathan Murphy who they want to, and then all of a sudden, the cards started to fall, and then there's a player there that club may not have thought was there, and they took, and then it sort of just come through, and so it was that was great.
Where do you see him playing? Is it as a forward? Do you think he's quick enough for that?
Well, he's been playing. He's playing all his VFL and pre-season games down back.
Yeah, right.
So it's a little bit, I think a little bit of that's more education.
Yeah.
As much as, you know, just his own individual development. I really like him forward, but he's shown some terrific traits down back, and probably on the weekend against Werribee was probably his best game.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been terrific.
Flynn Appleby has been a revelation as well off the rookie list. And
yeah. He's been terrific.
Obviously, a little bit of controversy surrounding how that all played out in the rookie pick, but I won't ask you to go into that.
Well, that's sort of just a little bit.
If you want to.
It was just a little bit reflective of the system, wasn't it? I mean, you've got the national draft, you've got the state combine, and you've got the rookie May. So, you know, I mean, I think it was a little bit more that, you know, we didn't think he'd needed to qualify with this, and it was he said, she said, and in the end, we copped it.
Anyway, the fine happened, and he's already repaid the fine, basically, because he looks a player.
Well, he doesn't get paid for another 3 or 4 weeks.
He's playing for free at the minute.
Yeah,
what did you see in him, and was he always on the radar? What point did you start to think about him as a potential selection?
Oh, look, some of the lockdown jobs he did, you know, were quite extraordinary, really. Like, I mean, he played on Cal Kirby as a 23rd player for North Ballarat at Victoria Park this particular game, and at that particular time Kale was in really good form, and you know, he was outstanding in the lockdown job he did on him. I think he played on Jaron Myers, and at one point in time, and he was one of the few players that really could put him to sleep. So it was just those abilities to, he's a very, very task orientated player, and you saw the job that he's done over the last couple of weeks. It's still a marathon with him. He'll improve. He comes at the program. Not too many guys like to go to him in the match practice because he's just Adam, and he's just such a super competitor and a great young man.
Going back to the 2016 draft, I think now, so a couple of years, a couple of father sons in Josh Dacos and Cal Brown. Are you happy so far with their progress and how they've come on after?
Oh, yeah, terrific. I mean, I thought, you know, particularly, well, Cal had come through that Eastern Rangers program and, you know, and Josh was a late starter through Oakley, as we all know. For both of those boys to play last year, you know, we've been, you know, you couldn't be more happy the way that they've gone. Both, you know, Josh, again, I watched Josh on the weekend, and, you know, he's, you know, the way that he's going about it, it's not going to be too long before he will present at a senior level again, and we can see what Cal has just been, you know, steadily be able to improve, and that's all you can ask of all those boys. They're just continually to trend up, which has been really good.
Decca, we love our listeners, and I did put it out on Twitter that you're coming in, and a couple of Collingwood supporters were interested and wanted me to ask you about Braden Sire.
Yeah,
I was going to get the wrong either way there, and his development, because I think from all reports he's improving and getting pretty close.
Oh, look, he's been terrific. Like, I suppose with Braden, the one thing that he just needed to go at it, you know what I mean? Like, he's been really unfortunate in the injuries that he's had, and none of them have been soft tissue injuries. He hurt his back, had to have an operation on his back, and broken jaw or a cheekbone or whatever it was. So it's all just bad luck type stuff. But he's put in a really, really solid 6 weeks now, and I know he's been in discussion for senior footy in the last 2 to 3 weeks, and you know, he'll be. I thought he was, if not best on the ground, he was very close last week. So he's absolutely in that train, yeah, which is terrific.
Yeah, he's constantly asked about it. Bucks' presses, Ben Guthrie from AFL.com.au loves him at the moment. Yeah. So I think he's won't be too far away, surely.
Inside here is just terrific. Yeah, so it's great.
Looking at some of the 2015 crop, and Ben Crocker's one that sort of been talked about a lot lately, his journey and all, I guess, the off-field stuff that he's had to deal with, which I guess for a long time no one at the club really knew about because he just didn't talk about it. But his progress this year has been incredible too.
Yeah, and again, that's, you know, we spoke a little bit earlier on about Cal and you know, with Jaden and these guys. And he's another one of the reasons why we've been able to sort of, you know, start to trend, you know, north. So, no, he's been terrific. I mean, he's always been a hard worker. And as you say, just the way he carries himself, given some off-field circumstance that we're all mindful of, and we all support him in as well, which is really important for both Ben and family.
He was pick 65. That you've got some real value out of that draft late. Tom Phillips is pick 58. Rupert Wills is 63, and he's played some good footy too at senior level. Mm. Did you foresee Tom Phillips being able to have the impact he's had at AFL level? It was mentioned last week. He sort of come from the back blocks of the footy industry in some ways because he was overlooked in a draft. Then at pick 58, you're not assured of anything.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar to Tom Langdon, I suppose. Mm. You know, a lot of respect coming in as a 19-year-old, but look, he's been extremely consistent. I mean, the games, in a lot of ways, the games come to him in because he's so aerobically high end. He's so that's always been there, and he's always been a massive runner. But in his final year, when he played in the grand final, he started on the wing, and then he went back and did a really strong defensive job on a player. I thought that was probably the tipping point in my sense.
And he did that as well.
The other boys' sense. So.
He did that as well against Cal Archie during the championships.
Correct. I think that. But what's been really impressive with Tom is the way that he started to round out his game now, like his skill and decision making has been on a consistent upward trend, and that's just reflective of the amount of work that he's doing, along with the support of the development coaches and the line coaches.
Cal, does he have a podcast, Tom?
He does have a podcast. It's called The Boardroom. I've been on it.
Happy now.
yeah, good on him. He's studying journalism, so we might get him in here at AFL.com at some point.
You want to put away a couple of hours because he won't get him.
He can chat.
He can chat.
What about Sam Murray? Because everyone's talked about him as well, sort of like, where did this guy come from? I mean, how far out had you been sort of tracking him?
Oh, well, we obviously in his 18th year, his draft year, he didn't traditionally come through that pathway. I think he was rejected by, for whatever reason, from Murray, and he was playing in the O&M. We actually had him on our draft list, but you know, circumstances we weren't able to select him for whatever reason, as we discussed a little bit earlier on. You know, other players were there, we rated higher, etc. And then the rules enabled Sydney to be able to take him as his own selection, which they obviously did. His first year was a little bit intermittent by his own undertaking. I don't think his standards were where they should be, and he'll be the first one to admit that. I mean, last year, we're talking 2017 at the start of the year, it was probably heading down that same path. He was playing more mid-forward. But I think it was a conversation with Reshaw, who told, look, you know, we'll try you in the back half. And myself and Dom, we were at a game, I think it might have been against Brisbane, and, you know, just his ability to get through the lines and his run was really, you know, was really evident. Mm. At that point in time, we had some issues with Ben Sinclair in terms of his durability and so on, and so we needed to support that area of the ground. And as we followed Sam's, I suppose, development in the second half of the year, he just got better and better and better. So we were able to facilitate the trade, and he's come back. And you know, he really didn't do a pre-season, so where he's at the moment, has been a real credit to him and the coaching staff.
Yeah.
But he's going to have some challenges going forward. There's no two ways about that, because we can all see his speed and he uses the ball quite well in that. But, you know, it is baby steps with him. He has only played 7 games and he's only 20 years old. So we've got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So
another young player is Darcy Moore, and he was obviously drafted in 2014 and has played both ends of the grounds back recently after a bit of a hamstring niggle this year. Where did you pick him, thinking that he'd play long-term for you guys?
Probably more forward, but having said that, you know, through his draft year, you know, he'd played, I think he played predominantly the national championships forward, but he'd been exposed at both ends of the ground through at Oakley, and he was equally proficient. So I suppose from our perspective, we've only really seen him at a senior level in the one game, down back, and that was the Melbourne game last year where Nathan flung him back in the second half and he was able to cut off the incoming balls. And so he's obviously, he'd been trained up in the pre-season through there, and unfortunately he had some injury issues. So going forward, I suppose he just needs to probably get a body of work, and then what will be, so to speak.
Is there an area of the field or positionally an area that you guys think could be strengthened on your list? I mean, some people have spoken about the tall forwards. I guess Mason Cox is having the best sort of month of his career so far. Yeah. We'll see how he goes.
I think sometimes with Mason we forget, you know, in essence he's really just coming out his second year of footy. Mm. So he's done his Oz kick now. He's, you know, under 11 to a certain extent. But I mean, he's just progressing each. And that was really evident in the last 2 to 3 games last year. You could really see the progression he was making on a week-to-week basis, and he's been able to pick that up. He didn't get off to a good start against Hawthorn, and, you know, there was a little bit of a criticism coming his way. But I think we do forget that 130 mil of rain was dropped in the afternoon sort of thing, you know what I mean? But it was pretty of an easy target. But, again, like, it was really pleasing to see Mainly. He had a major impact on our win on the weekend. You know, it was some couple of pretty telling marks at really crucial times. So, but, yeah.
Everyone talks about this premiership window. Does it actually exist? And if it does, where do you think Collingwood sits or is placed at the moment?
I don't know about premiership windows, but I think we're sort of building towards a nice balance of players that are sort of edging up towards, the 7,500 game mark. Yep. I mean, obviously we've got the Penderbys of the world and the side bottoms of the world and all those sorts of things, but, I mean, we touched on this a little bit earlier on. I think that we just need improvement across the board in our whole list. We're really, really encouraged with the way our seconds are going, because that's a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. And as Cal touched on with Braden and Sam McClarty and Nathan Murphy and these sorts of guys, they're really starting to develop. Even Jack Madgen, who's a Cat B player for us, played his best game on the weekend. So it's not just those boys that you're exposed to at a senior level. It's the guys in the seconds that are really starting to trend up as well. So that's reflective of the whole football club. It's reflecting of the coaching. It's reflective of our off-field management. Nick Maxwell's come in and had a really profound impact in that area as well. So it's constant improvement across all areas of the department, which will reflect on the players. And you can see the way the boys are playing. They're enjoying the way they're playing, and they're playing for each other. So the key is for us to be able to maintain that and improve on that. You see the Scharenbergs and the Aces and these sorts of guys. These guys have been around for 3 or 4 years, but it's just, you know, it's
they
just
haven't had luck with injury either.
No, correct. But you know, now they're getting some blue skies and you know, clearly the systems and the coaching and all that sort of stuff are starting to be all in sync. And then, you know, who knows? I mean, you could see what happened with Richmond last year. It was just amazing. So, but unless you can have that level of continuity and you know, collectiveness across the whole department, it's, it just doesn't happen. So, fingers crossed.
Collingwood gets linked with all the big names. I'm sure you're aware of that. Some of it might be true. Some of it might not be. You've managed to nab
a
couple of them.
Got a treasure chest?
Yeah. Well, you might need one if you go after Tom Lynch. Do you think he's on the radar for you guys, and is he a player that would be of interest?
well, Ned's looking after all that now, so you'll have to get him. And but I mean, clearly, we discuss things. Look, I mean, God, are you talking Tom Lynch in Queensland or Tom Lynch in Adelaide?
What's that little girl? Why not both? No, the Gold Coast one.
Oh, look, I mean, I think that, I mean, everyone will assess the needs and all those sorts of things. And have we got the cap space? Haven't we got the cap space? You know, have we got in a player that's going to be able to develop into that role and so on and so on and so on? I mean, I was discussing just the other day with a player about a player, and we were just talking about him. And, you know, so, well, okay, well, if we bring player X in, well, what sort of an impact is that going to have on one of our other players, our younger players, our 19, 20, 21-year-olds? So all of a sudden we stimmy his development. Hmm. And I'm probably getting off track here a little bit, but...
Purposefully.
Yeah. But, you know, we feel that we've got a really strong group of sort of 19, 20, 21, 22. If there's a player that will suit our needs out there, and we've got the scope to do it in terms of a financial scope and a positional scope, absolutely go for it. It doesn't necessarily have to be Tom Lynch.
I guess part of the list management as well is retention, and you've got a couple of those guys in that age group who are important for you to re-sign. One of them is Jordan DeGoe. He kicked 5 on the weekend, out of contract at the end of the year, yet to really start contract the talks, as I know, in real discussions.
Yeah.
St Kilda's interested. A lot of clubs are interested in him. Any progress there from your end that you can keep us updated with on Geordie's situation?
No, again, I'm sort of Ned's looking after all that sort of stuff, but, you know, I think that it's pretty well documented that Geordie wanted to just get a really strong body of work, and but what I will say is that the way that Geordie has been able to approach his football and the way he's gone about it has been a real credit to him, and you know the leadership group have really supported him. You just couldn't be, you can't play at the standard or the level he's at now without that support.
Mm.
So post mid year break, I suppose, something potentially be going on.
How good can he be? Does he remind you of players that are out there at the moment, who've already got there and done it? You know, he's obviously got a lot of tools.
You're asking the wrong bloke here.
I'm asking the right bloke.
No, I'm an unabashed fan of Geordie. I mean, the sky's the limit for him. He really is. And again, I mean, what? We forget he hasn't done a pre-season yet. I mean, literally has not done a pre-season. He's got power. He's strong overhead. You saw some of the stuff he did on the weekend, which is really, how far can he go? God, I mean, who knows?
Who would you compare him to, Cal?
Number 4 at Richmond.
I like it.
Mm.
Mm.
Needs to work on his don't argue, maybe.
He's got a few tats, so they're coming. I was going to say he's wearing his tats, but he's got a few of them developing anyway. But look, there's the power of the speed, the goal kicking.
Oh, he's an incredible player.
The match winning ability. And look, Dusty wasn't winning that many games off his own boot at the same age. Geordie's done it a couple of times now. He did it last year against the Eagles again on the weekend.
Yeah.
So there's some similarities. And Dusty, as we know him now, wasn't this Dusty until last year, really.
No, correct. I mean, statistically at the same age. Well, they're not dissimilar. It's a little bit, a little bit there, a little bit there. You know what I mean? One thing about, as I said with Geordie, he's just really starting to look at and really get what's required. Me personally, I'm extremely proud of him the way he's going about it. So, and I know the rest of the club is as well.
Good stuff.
That's the Pies side of things. Let's take a wider look at the industry as a whole. And I think Gil brought up on this show late last year, Cal, mid-season trade period or a mid-season draft. What are your views on either of those?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We were asked to submit our recommendations or views.
Your feedback.
Feedback. It's an interesting one because we it's hard to have a view unless you've got all the information. Mm. All clubs have got 44 players, whether it be 38 and 6, 39 and 5, 44 and 4, 40 and 4 or whatever. So if we were to trade a player out, what's the implication, or in for that matter, what's the implications in terms of list size, TPP, do you need to clear room in your TPP to be able to bring a player in? Yeah. So there's all those, I suppose, dominoes that you need to, we need to have some clarity on to have a view one way or the other. But okay. I think, I get the feeling that it's already, you know, that those discussions are already happened. But
do you like the concept?
I'm a little bit like Barmy, I suppose. I'm probably against it more. Okay, well, this is all part of your list management. You need to try and get the balance of talls and smalls and mediums and all those sorts of things. And injuries happen, but if you've got your management right, you should be okay. Mm. You know, that's the way that I see it. But you know,
You said before, I guess the rules are the rules, and you guys might benefit from them this year in terms of the NGA and Bailey Wraith and Isaac Quayner and father son as well. But do you think the draft is too compromised?
Potentially. I mean, potentially.
There could be 20 bids this year, potentially.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we were sort of looking at something the other day. We thought it might have been even as high as 23. But, you know, considering that statistically across the board, it's probably, 69, 70 live picks in the national draft. So that's a third of the draft could potentially be compromised. And I don't think that's necessarily going to regress. And the only reason I say that is because that, you know, clubs are really, they're spending resources in and around their zone. So the talent is going to be, obviously, there's going to be a lot more talent, A, identified and B, developed. Mm. And then you've got the Northern Academies as well. So, you know, it certainly has got that potential. There's no two ways about that.
The competition committee is meeting this week. Mm. I think your president's on it. And this has been a talking point for around a lot of clubs, the NGA and the sort of compromised nature of the draft. Is it something that you would tell him about?
Definitely, 100%.
To bring up?
Yeah, 100%. And Ed's really, you know, he'll always be, you know, contacting, you know, not just myself, other departments, you know, I suppose key stakeholders within the department with their thoughts and views and all those sorts of things. And, he's certainly aware of what our views are and all that sort of stuff. But we're only one of 18. Mm.
Now, we know Cal's devastated that potentially the Academy Tour, the US trip is off for next year. There are some proposed changes to the Academy structure.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on the proposed changes?
I'm not fully over everything, but, you know, suffice to say that, you know, the level two and the level one will be, I suppose, dissolved. Mm. I've spoken to Tristan on and off, and you know, I suppose one thing about Tristan, he is open to discussion, and I think that's really important. I think that we really need to engage the key stakeholders, and that are the clubs. We've got a lot of experience across the competition, you know, guys like Scotty and Kinnear and others that, you know, that they've been around a long time, and I think that the more that we communicate with the clubs, and, you know, the clubs, we're not going to agree with everything, but I think that everyone wants what's going to be benefit for the game. And I think with talent, it's at a really interesting stage, because I think that we've just got so much competition for elite talent, you know, cricket, basketball and so on.
Esports.
Correct. And I think that it's just so important we get this right. And I'm all for pouring financial resources to various states and getting best practice there. But I don't think it's very important that we don't ignore the elite talent. And I think that's where the Academy was really good. It was been you're able to... Now, whether it's in America or Queensland or wherever, it's irrelevant. To be able to go, and you've been there, Cal, to be able to go there and assess and see how players interact with each other. And it's not so much your Sam Walshes of the world or your Lukosius of the world, because it's more the lower end of the elite level. And you can see them rise.
Brings them up.
Almost on a daily basis. And it's not just on field, it's off field, it's best practice. See the Ian Hills and your Jason Carters of the world to be able to interact within the group, where you may say, well, okay, how could this potential player relocate? They're all those little things that, and I'm absolutely having been to the camp where Joey Danaher and Brody were at, and I think he might have been at that one.
Yeah, it was in Italy,
There's not a doubt, and you know, some of the things that happened on that camp, there's no way we would have taken Brody if we hadn't been at that camp.
Yeah, right. Very interesting. And last one.
Yep.
Plans for a two-night draft. What do you make of that? And that does seem like it's on the horizon this year.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice to get some confirmation of that at some point, but from your perspective, I imagine they might need to find a venue first, Nat.
Yes, that would help.
What do you think? How do you think it would work? And do you think it would work, I guess, is the main question.
Oh, I mean, I think that, you know, the fact that we've been able to try things, whether it be the training and picks and so on, I mean, it'll evolve. I mean, you know, if it runs over the two nights this year, that's all well and good. And,
Do you want your moment back where you get to call out Jaden Stevenson's name instead of Gill up there, or
Gill,
would you like?
That's a rogue, man.
I reckon you guys deserve your moment. I think Gill might actually be happy to give it back to you.
Yeah.
Well, after the Adelaide experience,
oh,
I'm
gosh,
sure he
yes.
was. But I mean, you guys know better than anyone that it just seemed to create so much interest.
Mm.
And, you know, Ned's just come back from the States and some of the things, you know, that, you know, and I've been as well with Jeff and had a look at different systems and all that sort of stuff. I suppose the one thing is that not everything's going to work under our systems in terms of given the number of picks we've got, the number of players we've got on the list and so on and so on and so on. So
I imagine you watched the NFL draft?
Yeah, I did.
So I don't follow it at all, but how about the reaction in the crowd when the number one pick's name was called out? And I turned to the fans, oh, no!
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can spend a whole night on YouTube looking at the different draft picks that have been taken over the years.
The reactions.
And the parties and the reactions and all this. Well,
that one, if he's no good, that reaction's going
to follow around. As long as we don't have like that one in the second, they were saying in the third and the fourth round that they're looking at ways to introduce a pick. Did you read about that?
No, no.
That one club wanted to send a pigeon in with the number. And as long as it doesn't get to that stage.
That'd be really exciting.
Oh, yeah, really great.
The pigeon goes rogue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Drops the wrong envelope. We didn't want him.
Yeah, that's cool.
Hey, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. It's been a great chat.
We'll see you in another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we'll get you back. We're keen on the Pies when they're up and about, so we thought we'd get Decker in.
No, of course. Now, before we finish off, Cal, Song of the Week.
Song of the Week this week is Believe by Eamon Jones.
I thought you were going to say Cher.
No, well, she's touring.
Yeah, I know. Are you going to go?
No, probably not. But Eamon Jones, just a nice little singer. If anyone's out there interested in him, check it out. I don't really know how to describe him.
But what about your bargain feed for the week?
Well, we thought we'd change it up a little bit this week because myself and Decker are Richmond locals, so we thought we'd just do a Swan Street off.
What's the best place to eat on Swan Street?
Yeah.
On Swan Street?
Mm. So I'm going to go. There's a pretty new one that's just popped up. I've been there a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. It's Mashalaria. I think that's how you pronounce it anyway.
Yeah, that's in and out.
In and out,
40 minutes.
It's a good, cheap steak, though, and it's quality food.
Correct. But if you wanted one of your long lunches that usually go for 3 or 4 hours, that's not the place to go.
Oh, what's the one?
Well, what do you want? Do you want Greek?
Greek up the road.
Yeah, probably Agapi's.
Yeah, Agapi's pretty nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What about the best Thai? Because I know you're a fan around the corner. Yeah, we're not specifically on Swan Street. We're sort of moving to Church Street areas now.
Yeah, around the corner in Sabai.
Sabai.
Yeah.
Fish and chips is easily hunky-dory. And best burger is definitely 1090 burger. And also best chicken is Bell's Hot Chicken. So
the Vietnamese.
Oh, the Vietnamese, yeah, across the road.
Cochin.
And the Japanese, Kokoro.
I've never been there.
I bumped into you there. The sushi.
Oh, yeah, well, that's just a sushi bar.
Have you been to Modern Eatery?
Yes, that's actually quite nice.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah.
A nice little crispy chicken bao.
Anyway. I'm not a great cook.
That's all good.
Yeah, well, you've given someone food poisoning in the past that's been on our show. So, yeah, you've proved that more than once.
You might have got a couple of free feeds out of this. We had to plan it properly, you know that.
That's true, actually. We could have been sponsored by Bell's Hot Chicken.
Actually, we should do a podcast on site at Bell's Hot Chicken next time.
An OB, outdoor broadcast.
All right, Derek, thanks so much for coming in. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya.